Pelioitz, we want to study Ger. Ger means a foreigner or a stranger. It could also mean a convert. So this word Ger sort of has a, you know, an overall inclusive meaning. For example, he starts with the pasuk in Divrei Hayomim. It says Gerim Anachnu Al Haaretz.
Start a minute early, according to your ELC.
Yeah. We are gerim, we are foreigners on the land. Uksiv ki ger anochi imach. And a pasuk in Tillim says that I am a ger with you. I feel like a foreigner, a stranger. V'zeh klal gadol b'chol hayadus. He says that this is a basic principle in Judaism. Shelo yelech adam achar hamosaros. That a person should not desire luxuries. You know, there are two types of things that you can desire. There are the basics, you know, the needs, the basic needs. And then there are mosros. Mosros are luxury items.
Such as?
A luxury item would be, let's say, a beautiful couch, you know, that goes beyond. You can have already a regular chair or a couch that's simple. You know, that's a basic need. You could have kitchen facilities.
Come on, Louis Vuitton.
Correct. That's basic, you know. But then you could have some luxuries. You know, a person wants, beautiful swimming pools, and he wants to have in his house, gorgeous silverware and very expensive stuff. That's called mosros.
Like Louis Vuitton is like, you can buy a bag that's worth thousands.
Correct. And you could do away with a bag that costs you $25, you know, and it could also function. Sometimes a bag for $25, $50 is more functional than a fancy name that'll cost you $5,000. He gives the example of foods. You know, somebody wants to go out for gourmet restaurant every single night of the week. This is not something that Judaism is in favor of. Falal malbushim, he wants to get the most beautiful, fancy robes and wardrobes and the fancy designer names. And dira noi, he wants the most beautiful flat, you know, apartment. That's not the attitude of Yadus. The attitude of Yadus is that we in this world are gerim. We are sojourners. We are foreigners. Our world is a different world, as we'll soon see. Ella, what's my attitude towards this world? Ke'oreach. I am like a guest. Natola lun baderech. And we came to rest on the road. Like, you know, imagine if you're passing through a road and it's a long, dusty highway and you need a place to sleep. So you go into a motel. But that motel is not your permanent place of residence, you're just traveling through, you're a passerby, you stay there overnight. And he says, Kach Yisratzeh b'chol haboliyodo. That should be his attitude towards all his physical possessions in this world. He's like a stranger, he's a sojourner. But where is his real world? Kol magamoso, all of his strivings, tial olam haba, for the world to come. Kisham Beso, that's where his true house is. So when a person goes through this world, he's only traveling through this world on a temporary basis. This is not his real home. Vafilu mashiyelech achar in yonei olam hazeh, whatever he needs in this world, tiyeh magamoso, his attitude, his goal should be lios lo hachana, it should be a preparation for his ultimate world, and v'chol mas of you l'shem shemayim, whatever he does in this world, it should be for the sake of heaven. But bal Yosef, don't exceed beyond what's necessary. Al mashem muchrach, what he needs for his basic needs l'tzorach heftzei shemayim, in order to serve Hashem. V'al yasi enu yitzro, don't let his yitzara pull him away and allure him. B'masol shav, that he should spend money for nothing. umaduchim for these fancy luxuries, alfal pichein, darko shel yetzarah, the yetzarah tries to get the best of us, maral okon, this mosaris, he shows him all the expensive luxury items, you know, they look in neon lights, they look so attractive, so beautiful, and he presents it kilu heim echrechim, as if you can't live without it. You know, the greatest achievement of marketing today is they convince you that you need something that you never even dreamt you would need. You know, but they convince you need it.
Yeah, now.
That's what contemporary life is all about in marketing. Avol tzorech ladas, he has to understand, lahavchin, to make the distinction, bein hechrechi, that which is absolutely necessary, lemosoros, luxuryize, and v'lo yelech, Achar Atzas Yisrael. He should not be overwhelmed by the counsel, the foolish counsel of his evil intrigue, of his evil inclination. So tonight I want to study with you a little bit about this idea of what we're doing in this world and how we should be preparing for the next world and how we should be limiting our ways and not trying to overwhelm ourselves with all the luxuries and the needs that they convince you that you really need. So I want to begin tonight with Rav Moshe Feinstein. And this you'll see on the page that I photocopied with for you on number 6. I don't see that you gentlemen have that page. It's there it is. Oh good, you see Ora? Ora's my watch person here. She takes good care of it.
Not a watchman for sure.
Yeah. So if you'll see on the left side of your page, a tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein. What I find interesting about this tshuva is that Rav Moshe talks about what it's like in America. And he uses the term good times. What does it mean, good times in America? And he says the following, B'dinasenu, in our country, may rov habracha shenasan Hashem yizbarach, because of the overwhelming blessing that Hashem has bestowed upon us, yesh ratzon, it develops within us a desire, a taiva, a craving, lahanos olam hazeh, to benefit from this world, bechol atanugim, with all the pleasures that are possible. Shekorin lazeh, good times. These are the good times that we want to have. And marketing just hits you from all sides. If you go on the internet, you know, they'll show you whether you like it or not, you know, all the pleasures in life and what you can see and what you can get and what you can buy. And we live in a very highfalutin society in America where everything is presented as beautiful and it's worth investing the money. He says, Gamzed, this phenomenon is a davar hamakalkel es ha'odam. I would underline those words. In Rav Moshe's perspective, this is something that ruins man. It has a negative, detrimental effect on man's spiritual psyche. Shemargil is yitzro lis avos lidvarm shein tzorach behem. He trains himself to have desires and cravings for things that he doesn't really need. And as a result, sometimes mashkis es midosav, it really undermines his ethical personality, because again, he's no longer putting the emphasis on what is absolutely necessary to serve God, but rather he's putting the emphasis on getting more and more and more. And he gets so caught up, almost addiction, acha nefach l'chaya ra. You know, he's willing to do anything, even if it means pushing the next one over the ledge, in order for him to get that which he wants, which he desires. So it may seem like a small, insignificant phenomenon, but it grows on you, it trains you, and it mushrooms until your personality completely changes. Mevakesh, maschil levakesh tavosov. He begins to look and see how he can fulfill his desires. Again, it's like an addiction. And even if it's something that's heter, you know, legally it's okay, you know, it's fine, but he needs it badly. But he doesn't really need it. He only needs it because he's engendered with himself over the course of time by getting addicted to these needs and these pleasures. An absolute craving. It becomes like he can't live without it. Uksha'i afshar lo yimna af mi isur. And if he can't get it, if he can't, possess what he needs, then he's going to even violate Isurim. Ulahatzik Maisov, sometimes in order to justify his actions, Nasa gam lekofer chas v'shalom. He sometimes even denies God. Ukim amorom. Chazal tell us that why did the Jewish people worship idols? Lahatir arayos. In order to permit them to have immoral relations. So really, it wasn't an ideological desire to believe in deities and other religions, but rather this was a way of justifying their immoral relations. In other words, somehow within the context of idol worship, they had these kinds of these kinds of swappings and stuff like that. So he thinks that he starts with just an enjoyment and a desire for pleasure, but he ends up with denying the other world. You may remember the story of the Benos Moav. How did they entice the Jewish people to worship Moav? By presenting themselves for a free, for free ride, if you know what I mean. Free pleasure. What?
Znus, right?
For znus. So, the men already worshipped the idols that the women brought out in order to allow them to have, to get permission from the women to have the sexual pleasure that they wanted to have. So the whole kit and caboodle is really not just ideological, but it becomes ideological, but it really starts with this desire, this unbridled, if you would say, unrestricted desire for pleasure. And we live in a society, he says, in the United States, that we are so blessed with so many pleasures and so many great things that we get caught up in it. V'atorek pita ma'od al kach. The Torah is very, very careful about this. For example, there's a whole parsha called Ben Sorer Umore. Do you remember the rebellious child? Yeah. What was he guilty of? Do you remember the pasuk?
Took the wine and meat.
Correct. He was a Zolel Vesove. He just wanted unbridled pleasure. And at the end,
gluttonous eating.
And at the end, we were afraid that he would kill for that. Mishum Sheze Yovio Solovesoflios Listim Rotseach. You start with unbridled, unrestricted pleasure, and you end up being a murderer. We know, for example, that drug addicts are very often murderers. They need that drug. They need that fix so badly. So it started just with, a pleasurable pill that they took or whatever it is, a smoke or whatever it might be. And it ended up that they murder people in order to fulfill their cravings. They get so addicted. And therefore, he turns now to the schools and to the principals and to the teachers. And he says to them, "Tzrichim amorim lashkiach." He says it's very important that the teachers supervise lelamid l'talmidim, that they should supervise the students. Eich lehisnaheg, how to behave. Uledabri mon bignus baliataiva. Instead of building up those who seek, crave pleasures, but shvach, they should praise those who have a pleasure from Masim Tovim. He's saying like this, Rav Moshe Feinstein. He's saying you could get, very often you could get a kick out of a hedonistic pleasure. But there's another kind of a kick. If you do some good deeds, you also feel good about it. So what the teachers should do is they should try to channel their children within the educational system that instead of enjoying all the pleasures of life, the emphasis and the hierarchy of values should be on Masim Tovim, on doing good deeds, on being benevolent, of helping other people, of doing chesed, and they should emphasize the fact that that too will give you a certain kind of a pleasure. You feel good about the fact that you could be good and share what you have with others. So America, from Rav Moshe's perspective, is a society that's so wealthy, so affluent, that the opportunities for chesed abound. We just have to train our children that there are two ways they can get pleasure out of life. They can become addicted to physical pleasures, to the pleasures of hedonistic pleasures and immorality and in drugs and a million of other pleasures, or they can get addicted to the pleasures that they get from doing good things. So let's give them an addiction for doing good things. And this is the way we should train our children. This tshuva Rav Moshe Feinstein made a ripple effect in its time. About 25 years ago, I remember I was a youngster, and people were talking about this tshuva. First of all, they found it very cool that Rav Moshe Feinstein, I don't know if you've ever seen Rav Moshe Feinstein. Have you ever seen him?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, he's about 4'10". I don't even know if he was that tall. And secondly, he was a very humble person, and he spoke Yiddish. His English was very broken. And in this tshuva, he speaks about good times. You know, that was the cool phrase in America. And it's funny how he writes it in Yiddish, good times, you know. And another thing that made a ripple effect here is that people realized that Rav Moshe understood the difference between teaching children and teaching adults. When you're teaching an adult, you know, you could transmit to an adult, you know, the higher ideals that are abstract, that are ethical, and you can talk about striving, you know, you can talk to adults about leading a higher moral life. But when it comes to children, you have to bring it down to their level. Rav Moshe had an uncanny sensitivity or intuition towards the education of children. And it's exhibited here in this very, very powerful tshuva, where he says that children, they want pleasure. You know, right now, you know, if you ask a child what he wants the candy. That's what he wants. The Rambam writes in
iPod before.
Yeah, and if you get pleasure from other things, that's what. But it's always about pleasure seeking. And Rav Moshe wanted to suggest that we could take that desire for pleasure speaking in the case of a child, and we could channel it, direct it in the right way. We could have the child understand that there are many, many pleasures that he can get from doing good things. So could you imagine taking your children on an outing, let's say on Lag BaOmer, you know, you take the children out, and you challenge them to find in the park, you know, good deeds that they can do. And the children come running back to you and they say, Rabbi or Mrs. So-and-so who's in charge of the class, look what I was able to do. You know, I helped clean up the garbage. I helped somebody, you know, put out a fire. I helped this. I helped that. And it gives them a good feeling. And this is a kind of a training in which, instead of channeling their desires for pleasure into a purely hedonistic desire, which is makalkel es ha'adam, that's the language of Moshe here, it undermines the spiritual psyche of a person. You become addicted to pleasure. Instead, you become addicted to a different kind of pleasure, a pleasure and a kickback that you get from doing chesed. There's an interesting story here. I have my own questions on this story, and you'll probably have the same questions that I have, but just the idea of the story. This is number 8 on your page. You may recall the name of Aryeh Levin. He was the great Tzaddik Yerushalmi, and there are stories that abound about him, endless about the stories. This story I'd never heard. He was traveling in a taxi cab. So as they're on the way, you know, apparently he gets into the cab and he says, you know, drive north or whatever he says. So finally the cab driver asks him, where is your house? No response. Again, where is your house? No response. Finally, the nahag, the driver of the cab realizes he's getting nowhere fast. So he says to him, Eifa ata gar. Ah, emphasize the word gar. That's our subject for tonight. Gar. Where do you live as a sojourner? And he says, I nigar b'makom zer. Aryeh Levin tells him where he lives. So the cab driver asks him, well, I asked you twice, you didn't give me a response. He says, no, you asked me eifa abayit sheli. He says, abayit sheli eino be'olam hazeh. My house is not in this world. My house is in the next world. In the olam haba, that's the eternal world. Anachnu rak ovrim v'shavim kan. We're only gerim here. We're sojourners. We're traveling through be'olam hazeh in this world. It's a prozdor. It's only a tracklin. It's only a lead-in to get into the world to come. And if the word bayis means makom keva, keva means a permanent abode, well, I'm just a ger. I'm just here on a basic level. Now you ask me, Eifa ani gar? Oh, yeah, I can tell you where I live on a temporary basis. I live in the apartment on such and such a corner. Beautiful story, except I have one cash on the story. Why did Rabbi Aryeh Levin drive this cab driver crazy? You know what I mean? You know, I don't know. You know, the cab driver was just asking a very innocent question. Where do I take you to? Where's your house? But no, Rabbi Arya Levine, I guess maybe he saw that the cab driver had good potential for a moral lesson. I don't know. You know, maybe he wore a kippah, maybe he didn't wear a kippah, I don't know. But Rabbi Arya wanted to teach him, don't ask a person, where is his house? Because you won't get an answer. And a cab driver has to know where to drive to, so if you're not going to get an answer, that's not good. Ask him where he's gar, where he's a ger. So the Pele Yoetz, which we're studying tonight, you'll see on number two on the right column, says Ki gerim anachnu. How? What is our relationship to this world? We are sojourners. We are foreigners. Anachnu holchei drachim. We're just traveling through the land. Ke oreach not a lalun, like a person who needs a place to stay overnight. He checks into a local motel. But he's there overnight. He may sleep there six hours, and then he checks out in the morning. He says, "Ki kol ma shebolam azeh, all the pleasures of this world, rik vehemel, they're really empty. They're transitory. They're temporary. They're not real. They're not infinite. They're not eternal. V'eilanu michayim, what do we do with our life, our physical material life? El lavodas boreinu. All of our focus should be towards one goal, how to serve our Creator. V'lasos nachas ruach liotzreinu, and bring a pleasure to our Creator when He is satisfied with our actions. This is the thesis of the Pele Yoetz. And, you know, I'm reminded of the story. The Gemara tells in Masechta Yoma that the Kohen Gadol came out of the Kodesh Kadoshim. How many times did he go into the Kodesh Kadoshim during the course of a year? Once, only on Yom Kippur. When he came out, he raised his eyes towards God with a supplication. And we recite this in the Musaf service of Yom Kippur. And he says, Al tekabel tfilas ovrei drachim. Don't accept the prayers of those who pass by, who are travelers. Very strange. Here's the Kohen Gadol once on the holiest year, the holiest day of the year, leaving the holiest place on earth, and instead of praying to God, he prays against prayer. And he says to God, don't accept their prayers. That's a very negative kind of approach to prayer. But the answer is, many people have what you call selfish prayers. They're passing through the land. They don't need rain. Rain is a nuisance for them. They want it to be dry outside. They want to see the sun. But the local people, we here in Eretz Yisrael, live in an agricultural society. We desperately need the rain. So that when the Kohen Gadol raised his eyes towards heaven, he wanted to make sure that Hashem should outlaw and not accept the tefillah of the ovrei drachim, those who are simply selfishly interested in their needs. They're passing through. We have to understand that when we go through this world, we have two attitudes, a choice of two attitudes. Either we could see ourselves as, you know, we're passing through this world, so let's eat, drink, and be merry, let's enjoy it, let's exploit it, let's get as much pleasure as we can. Those are the hedonistic pleasure seekers in the world, which, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, ultimately become addicted to pleasure. And then you have another attitude. I'm traveling through this world. It's only a preparatory stage. I have to get to the next world. And here I want to share with you an insight of Rav Shlomo Zalman here. You'll see it on the bottom right, number three on your page. Now again, Rabosa, I always apologize to my class, and I say, look, the text is in front of you. You may not want to read the text. You like to hear it. In Yiddish we say, Oisavenik, outside. I need the text. So I apologize for that, but I need the text. Okay. Avraham Avinu is visited by three visitors. And the Torah goes into great detail, every nuance of the conversation and what he said to them and his achnosis orchid. So he says, Sa'adu libchem, I want you to have a full meal. And Avraham Avinu really prepared a glorious banquet for them with the help of his wife Sarah. But then he says, V'achar tavoru, and then get out of here. You know, tavoru means, you know, you've got your meal, I did what I had to do, you know, pack your bags and go on to your next stop. Hikshu ha-mefarshim, the commentaries are very perplexed about this language. Ein ze miderech musar, this is not an ethical kind of speech, what we call in Yiddish edelkeit, you know, when you have to be sensitive and very, you know, very careful about the words that come in your mouth. V'derech kavod, this is not a way that you respect someone by saying, V'achakach yelchu lekem. Go on to your next stop. You know, like, pack out.
Scram
from here. Excellent. V'nira. So Shlomo Zalman wants to suggest the following. Hine. The Torah says, where is Avraham Avinu? He is sitting out in front of his ohel. Hu yoshev pesach ha-ohel. The emphasis here is on the word ohel. Ohel is a tent. Ohel is something that you pitch on a very temporary basis. Tent dwellers will fold up their tent every couple of weeks and they'll move on to the next spot. So Avraham Avinu is described here as Yoshev Pesach HaOhel. He says, wait a minute. Did Avraham Avinu not live in a house? Did he not have a bayis banui me'avonim made of stone? After all, the pasuk describes him as Nesi Elokim Ata. He was the prince amongst the nations. He was like king. He was no doubt quite wealthy, and he should have had a house. Why is he sitting in front of an ohel, a tent? And the answer, he says, is that Avraham Avinu's attitude towards this world is that of a tent. We don't live in houses. Like if you ask Rabbi Levin, where's your house, right? You're not going to get much of an answer because I don't have a house. I have an ohel. Ohel is called Diras Aroi. By the way, where did you hear that phrase?
Sukkah.
Excellent. In Sukkah. Sukkah is called a Diras Aroi. It's a temporary dwelling. Where is the bayis? Ikar ha-bayis hu ba'olam ha-elyon. Is in the higher worlds that we'll achieve after Me'ev Yesrim. And therefore Chazal always described this world as a prozdor. It's only a temporary, you know, a place that you walk through. In a, what's it called in English?
A corridor.
Excellent. A corridor. And that's how the Mesillas Yesharim begins. Is he says the following: Olam Haba is the ultimate beautiful place where you want to end. So Haskin Atzmacha, set your record straight here in the prose door, in the corridor, Kadesh Tikonis Lachaklin. Viadua, and we know that a tzaddik, his attitude towards everything in this world is the attitude of an ohel, of a temporary dwelling. The Malachim, these angels, ask Avraham Avinu, Aye Sara Ishtecha, where is Sara your wife? Basically, they were asking, where is she spiritually? This is a homiletic interpretation. They weren't asking physically where she's located. These were Malachim, they knew. But they were asking, what Madrega was she on? And his answer was two words, Hine Ba'oel. Her Madrega is that of an Oel. Her attitude towards this world and its pleasures is that of a temporary ohel. And it's a diras haroi. It's only a temporary dwelling. And therefore, v'hu yoshev pesach ha-ohel, he, Avraham Avinu, is sitting in front of the ohel. And why is he sitting in front of his ohel? Even if this world is temporary, even if the ohel symbolically means the temporary, but he should have been inside the ohel. The answer is no. Why did he sit in front of the ohel? Everybody, why is he sitting in front of the altar? He's looking for over Misham, he's looking for passers-by. He understands that his purpose in this world is to find gerim, is to find sojourners, find people who don't have a roof over their heads. They're passing by. And his whole agenda in life was lahachnis orchiv. And he had another agenda too. He would bring them into his house, feed them, and then teach them. So it was not just a mitzvah of achnas zarchim, it was also a mitzvah of Torah study. What did he teach these people? Achdus, the unity of God. Emuna, the faith in God as the Creator. And not only that, v'chol midos atovos, and he taught the people all the great ethical values. V'hizbir lahem, and he explained to them, shekol ha'olam hazeh, the entire world, eno rak diras haroi, uka ohel. That just like I live in an ohel, your world is also that of an ohel. And therefore, those who go out to the marketplace and they want to make a killing, you know, out in the market, larviach schor v'chadome, and all they do is spend their days and nights endlessly during the market days, and that's what they do. And when they make a killing, when they have a profit, they spend the time b'macholo, b'shiyoso, eating and drinking, and that's what they do. No, 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 no. Those are the people who see this world as a bias, as an ultimate permanent domicile.
Good times.
Good times, like Rav Moshe called it. Excellent. However, the truth is,
as Kohelet said,
right, each drink of beer, we mentioned that before. But if he knows that he's living in an oil here, he's only an over v'shav, he's trained, he's on a temporary basis going through this world, is then he will not put all his focus in this goal of Yarviach in order to make more money. Now we're on the top of number four, and he says the following: K'mochein adam ba'olam hazeh, a person in this world, shetzarach lachshav shekol iker hayosokan, he's here in this world, it's only larviach mitzvos, not to make money in the marketplace, but to amass and amalgamate more and more mitzvos. Veliknos maisim tovim, endless chain of good deeds. Lo vilo, which are going to eventually escort him lebeso. And where is his bias? The Olam Haba. So the Olam Hazeh is now, he's an over v'shav, he's only passing through like an oel. It's a diras haroi, like a sukkah. But his ikar diraso, where is his pious? It's an Olam Haba. If he collects enough mitzvahs, then all these good deeds will escort him to his pious. They'll be the escort to take him to his home. And therefore, Avram Avinu sits Pesach ha-oel. Now the people come by, and he introduces them to the oel philosophy. And therefore, he says to them, "Come, sadu libchem, eat, and I have a very good meal prepared for you. V'acher kach tavoru, and understand the philosophy of the ohel of acher kach tavoru. Kol hanoshim shesadu etzah, whoever ate by him, ro'u hanhagaso, they saw the way he treated the seuda. He didn't eat simply for the sake of pleasure. Eating was a means to an end rather than an end to itself. Vilamdu mimenu, and they imitated Avram Avinu. That Olam Hazeh, the attitude should be that this world is only an Olam, it's a world of Over Veshav. We're here as sojourners, we travel through the land, but it's only an Ohel. We're not living in our bias. And therefore Avram Avinu says, Sadu libchem v'achar tavoru, meaning, acher kach tavo, after you see and you learn my teachings, you'll come to a different madrega, a different perspective on life. You'll understand the acher kach tavoru, that this world is just the acher kach tavoru. It's just a place that we stop on a temporary basis, preparing ourselves for the ultimate bias, which is Olam Haba. Beautiful piece from Shlomo Zalman. I want to study with you a little bit more of the Peleoites. If you have the photocopies, I think there's some more copies on the table in the back. And he says the following, that the word ger also has another meaning. And it's a reference to gerim, to those who join the faith of Israel. And the Peleoites points out that we have to identify, we have to empathize with the gerim. We too are gerim. So we have to see, in a sense, a reflected image of ourselves in the gerim. And the Torah commands us on avas hager, to love the ger. And the Torah tells us, this you'll see on page 85 if you have that page, that whenever we chance upon a ger tzedek, a true, genuine ger, ro'u l'rachem olav, we should have compassion on him or her, ma'od ma'od. We should try to support them financially. We should try to find a place for them to live. We should try to calm them down, and they're very nervous sometimes. They feel a little bit out of place. You know, Judaism and Jewish communities are very foreign to them. They feel like strangers. We have to try to be mafias them, vidvarim, speak to them, build them up, give them a comforting feeling, be warm and embracing, accept them into the community. And then he says the following. He says that included in this great mitzvah, avas hagerim, is to help not only a ger, which means technically a non-Jew who converted, but also la'azor l'sayeh, to help ish, even a Jewish person by birth, hanodeid mimakomo. He finds himself in a foreign land. V'hu ger b'eretz nachriyah. Right now he's also considered a ger. So when the Torah says, love the ger, says the Peliotz, it's a pretty revolutionary idea. The word ger here, the mitzvah to love a ger, is not limited to a convert, but it applies to anyone who's considered a ger b'eretz nachriyah. He's far away from home. Right, in Simon and Garfunkel terms, we'd say he might be homeward bound, but right now he's not home. And he may be a wealthy person, but if he's not home, then he's a little bit lost. He may feel that the culture is so antithetical to what he's used to. And therefore, says the Paleoids, the Torah emphasizes, Atem yodatem es nefesh ager. You recognize, you appreciate and understand the nefesh, meaning the psyche of a ger. And that doesn't mean necessarily that he's a ger, you know, ger tzedek, but it means that he's a foreigner and he's lost in this land. And you know, and you can identify and commiserate with his feelings as a ger, nefesh a ger. Why? The Torah adds, Ki gerim ha'yisim b'eretz Mitzrayim. You too are foreigners in the land of Egypt. You experienced it yourself. It's so much easier to help someone and feel for them and commensurate with their difficulties and empathize with their challenges if you yourself experience them. And therefore, he says, you are makir, you recognize rucho hanamucha, sometimes the very sensitive soul of a ger, velibo nishbar, his heart is a little bit broken, venidke, he's somewhat despondent, is therefore roi l'rachim olav, we should have compassion on such a person, l'karvo, to bring him close, lios imo oe varea, to be a beloved person to them, orea is a true friend, that he can rely on, that the ger could rely on la'ozro to help him, b'chol abav liyodo, in any way that you can do so. And I think to myself about the Chofetz Chaim Zichrono. The Chofetz Chaim lived in a community which is called Lithuania. Have you heard of the Litvaks? The Litvaks were the Jews from Lithuania. They lived a very unique style. I mean, it was their own community, and that's how they developed that culture, and the Chofetz Chaim was very much a part of that culture. But nevertheless, people came to him from other areas of the world. They came from various areas of Poland and Galicia, where there were not Litvaks, but rather Hasidim. Now, the approach of some of the giants and the Torah scholars in Lithuania was a little bit lukewarm, shall we say, as an understatement, towards the Hasidim. But the Chofetz Chaim was just the opposite. He had this tremendous warmth for Hasidim. And it got to the point where the Chofetz Chaim would treat the Hasidim in the same way that he treated his local people, with the same love and the same warmth. And Hasidim would come to him from all ends of the world to ask for counsel, for guidance, to get a bracha from the Chofetz Chaim. And I want to tell you two stories. One is very short. My father, when he was a young lad, he was about 11, 12 years old, he was getting shipped off to America by his parents, by my grandparents. My grandfather was already in America, coming back and forth, you know, whatever money he could eke out here and bring some money back to Lithuania. They were very poor. And when my father left for America as a young boy, he wanted to get a bracha. But they came from Hasidim, and to get a bracha from Hasidim was a long, long travel. So instead they went to the Chofetz Chaim. And my father got a bracha from the Chofetz Chaim. But here's another story I want to tell you. Some of the Litvaks, I don't know how they had the chutzpah of doing this, They came to the Chofetz Chaim and they said to him, Rebbe, I don't understand. We have a real machlokas, a debate between us guys and them, meaning the Hasidim. How could you be so warm to them? How could you reach out to the Hasidim? We have a plugta, we have a machlokas, a debate, a controversy with them. So the Chofetz Chaim, when he had questions like that, instead of answering the question, he would tell a story. And the story was meant to be a metaphor, a mashal. And if his audience was clever and sharp, they would understand, they would get the message. So he told the following story about a Jew who lived at the time of Reb Chaim Volozhin. Now, let's keep in mind, Reb Chaim Volozhin established the greatest Lithuanian yeshiva in its time and probably of all times, the yeshiva Volozhin. Today you could go visit it, it's a chicken farm. Anyway, so in the yeshiva in Volozhin, he had some great budding scholars, young men who were really on their way up. There was an individual who lived in Lita, and he was wealthy. Now again, what wealth meant in Lita, it's all relative, you can imagine. I mean, it didn't mean that he made a killing of millions on the stock market. But he had some funds. And he had two daughters to marry off. So he made the trek from his local town to Volozhin, and he asked for a meeting with Reb Chaim. And in closed chambers, he said to Reb Chaim, I want you to choose the most outstanding young men in the yeshiva. And I'll say it in Yiddish, I'm zitzen afkest, meaning I will support them, and they can learn for the rest of their lives. Reb Chaim got very excited about this opportunity. And sure enough, he finds what he considers a great budding scholar. And he marries the first of the two daughters. A short time later, the Rosh Yeshiva Reb Chaim finds another great budding scholar and they have a second wedding. The Baal HaBos is so wealthy, again, all relative terms, that he sets up two separate kitchens. Why? The first son-in-law loved milchiks. He loved cheese balances and milk patties and everything else. But he couldn't tolerate fleishiks. The second one loved fleishiks. And he couldn't tolerate milchiks. So he set up two different kitchens. And everybody was very tzufrid and everyone was happy. You know, this son-in-law ate his milchiks in his kitchen, and this ate his fleishiks in the other kitchen. However, unfortunately, as time went on, and the financial depression really hit that part of Lita, this man, we say in Hebrew, Yarad min al-chasav, he became very poor. He could barely afford stale bread or a piece of herring for his two sons-in-law. But he noticed something very strange. That even after this whole Yerida, the two sons-in-laws kept sitting in two separate kitchens. So he turns to his two sons-in-laws, calls them in for a conference, says, Rabbi, I don't understand. As long as we were wealthy and we could afford milchiks and we could afford fleishiks, I understand it was justified, I wasn't happy about it, but you ate in your own kitchen. But now that we bekoshi could afford a parva, a piece of a fish, all we have is a little piece of herring and some stale bread, your two talmidei chachamim from the same yeshiva can't sit at the same table? So the Chofetz Chaim turned to these smart outs and he said, you know what? There was a Vilna Gaon and there was a Baal Shem Tov and there were greats, there was milchiks and there was fleishiks. And they had a plukta, they had a machlokas, they had a debate. And this one went his way, and this one his way, and there were two communities. But today, again, this is the Chofetz Chaim a century ago, today, says the Chofetz Chaim, we bekoshi have a piece of stale bread. We don't have the Gaonim of Lita and the Gaonim of Chassidus. Can't we sit together at the same table? And that's how the Chofetz Chaim explained to his Talmidim how he loved all Jews. But the Chofetz Chaim also had a special feeling for yeshiva students who were away from their home. They were far away. And it's very interesting. My father, when he came to America, and he went to yeshiva, he didn't have much to support himself. And in the yeshiva, there was a dean. His name was Zar, Dean Zar. And he took my father in. And he gave my father whatever he needed. He gave him a dormitory room. He made sure he had food to eat. He made a bar mitzvah for my father. You know, that's called the Ahavtem Es HaGer. My father was a ger. My father, when he came to America, he would sit with kindergarten kids in class. And he was already 12. They were 5, 6 years old, but he was learning English for the first time. He was a real ger. He didn't understand American society at all. There was one occasion where a car was delivering something to the yeshiva, and it was a mother and a son, and the mother calls out to her son, "My baby." And my father said, "I don't get it. Your son is about 22 years old. Why are you calling him a baby?" You know, he didn't understand the language. You know, that was, you know, everything was foreign to him. He writes, "Ubi Yoser Yigdal Mitzvah Zos Al Ashkenazi Sholif Ben Asfaradim." I was very surprised that the Pelioitz gives the following example of someone who's out of touch with the local culture. An Ashkenazi finds himself in a Sephardic country. O Sfaradi Ben Ashkenazim V'Chadoma. They don't have the same language necessarily. This one speaks Spanish, this one speaks German or French. And he says, it's very depressing to find yourself in a culture where you don't understand the culture, you don't even understand the language. But here's a big mitzvah, a great mitzvah, V'ahavtem Es HaGer. I want to study with you another book that's also authored by the same author. It's called Oseh Peleh, and you'll see this on the right side of your page. This Oseh Peleh is a super commentary on the writings of the Pelioitz. And he speaks about the Pelioitz's emphasis on serving Hashem bi'ava. You could serve Hashem bi'yiran out of a state of fear. You're afraid of God's punishment. You want to be Otzei the mitzvah so that you won't be punished. But Oved mi'ava is on a much higher level. According to the Pelioitz, if he's motivated by love of God, out of a sense of chiba, then he goes way beyond the call of duty in terms of hider mitzvah, to beautify the mitzvah. Now, in the city of Hebron, the holy city of Hebron, there was a genius who was also a great saintly person by the name of Relio Mani. And what he used to do was, besides spending endless amount of time in teaching Torah, he was a great teacher of Torah in the city of Hebron. This goes back probably 150 years ago. He was also great at making peace and harmony between people. He was also great at making marital harmony. So he had many, many talents in Torah learning and teaching, in making peace, even in marital harmony. Now, from time to time, this tzaddik, this great saintly man, Rebbe Leo, would go out to the shuk. He would go out to the marketplace. What would he do? He became like the mashgiach, so to speak. He would supervise to make sure that each one of the sellers, when he was weighing, you know, the schora, in order to, let's say he was selling potatoes, so he would sell it at a certain price per weight, that all of the scales were b'emes u'bemuna, meaning there was no cheating. Everything was totally honest. Hu badak et avnei amaznayim, he would check the weights of their scales to make sure enam pgumos, so that there would be no overcharging. B'im ha-mishkal shes simanom al gabon evin mishakif es ha-emes, so that the mishkal, which it said there was a sign on top that this is the weight, was absolutely emes. And Rav Elio was always excited about the fact that the Jews in the marketplace were straight and honest. And that in almost all cases he found that there was no discrepancy in the Avonim and the Maznayim. Tochachto shenemra b'noam, because in the rare occasions that he found some sort of deviation, he would give tochach, he would rebuke, but b'noam means with a very soft approach. Astat shalah, he won over his audience, if you find me. They found him beloved because they understood his dedication to Yosher, to being straight and tzedek and being honest in their mischar. One day, Rav Elio gathers together these sellers and he says to them, Kama mekani ani bachem, how much am I jealous of you? Why? B'meshach yom, within the course of one single day, atem zochim, you merit l'kayim mitzvah saseh v'los saseh ramos. There are many positive commands to make sure that your scales are accurate, and los saseh, terrible averos if you violate that. V'ani, but I ain't zoch l'kayim. I never have the opportunity that you have on a daily basis. The people, the sellers, the vendors, were very excited by this. Why? Zokfu es gabon. You know, they were able to stand proud. Me'amel yomam hamufrak. They worked very hard from daybreak till dusk. And his words, the words of this great tzaddik Rav Elio, odedu es rucham. It gave them a certain refreshed attitude and zeal and excitement in their life. At some point before Rav Elio came along, Hayutzonim al nefesh ayefa, they were already all dried up, so to speak. They were so exhausted day after day about the backbreaking work that they did. And now they find out that they have a chelik, they have a portion of the mitzvos. Not only that, they have a portion of the mitzvos which in a sense exceeds that of the great tzaddik of their generation, Rav Elio. So this was a tremendous uplifting experience that they had. But let's go back to Rav Elio. Rav Elio is scratching his head and he's thinking to himself, you know what? I would also like to be part of this great mitzvah. So he has this idea in his head. And he says the following. That every year, for a certain period of time, it doesn't tell you mispar yamim, he would approach one of the vendors and he would buy his store from him with all the Chula, with all of its contents, all of its produce. V'rabbeinu nasan v'yado shel bala esek d'mei k'dima, he gave him a down payment for the store, and he began selling in the store. And as he's selling, he says, "Hareini makayim mitzvah saseh min haTorah." Every time he sold something, "I'm makayim a fulfilled mitzvah." Maznei tzedek v'yavnei tzedek yilucha. You have to have the proper, precise scales. And he said, "I'm a kind of mitzvah losa." I said, "Losalu avel b'mida b'mishkal u'b'minyan." And in this way, he says that Rav Elio would serve his clients, you know, the buyers, for a full hour, and then he would turn back to the owner of the store after a certain period of time. He doesn't tell you how long, and he says, "Would you like to buy back your store?" And he says, "For sure, I'd like to buy back my store." And he gives him back the money, you know, that he had paid for the store. He says, "Chavivai ta mitzvah zu." He loved and Rav Elio loved and cherished this mitzvah. Upam haya chozer umakaimo. Every time he would come back to fulfill it, and he would feel like he's filling up his bags with another mitzvah, with other mitzvahs, and he would show the sochrim that although they're able to do this mitzvah on an ongoing basis, 24/7, he also wanted to participate and partner with them in this mitzvah. That's how important the mitzvah was in the eyes of Elio, and therefore he would take out precious time from his learning and his teaching in order to be a socher, to be a seller for a certain period of time. And once again, I think this reflects this idea that Pelioit says we're here in this world to do mitzvahs, to influence others and uplift them, to give them words of comfort. And we're also here in this world to look for and even invent, so to speak, new opportunities to do mitzvahs. I know it's getting a little late, but I do want to study with you number 7 on your page, which is a piece from Rav Eliyahu Lapyan. Rav Eliyahu Lapyan was one of the great Bali Musar of 2 generations ago in a yeshiva here in Israel called Kfar Chassidim. And he authored a Musar work which is called Lev Eliyahu. And he writes in this work of ethics, Ki hachana li oneg olam haba maschil mi oneg olam hazeh. He says that we can have pleasures in this world that prepare us for the pleasures in the next world. Now, when we hear those words, they sound very, very strange, very odd. He says, Ki aprozdo, the corridor, which is Olam HaZeh, this world, is mimin atraklin. It's from made out of the same stuff as the ultimate world, the Olam HaBa, you know, the palace that we want to get into. Sharei enos improzdo me'etz l'traktin shel kiros paz v'avonim tovos. He says that when you build a corridor for a beautiful palace, and the palace is made of gold insets, is that how you say it?
Inlay,
and avonim tovos and special stones. It would be absolutely ridiculous if the prozdor, the corridor, is cheap and it's made of the cheapest material. So therefore, when Chazal say Haskein Hatzvacha beprozdor, you should prepare yourself in the corridor Kadesh Tikonis Latraklan, what they really mean is that you should train yourself to benefit from this world in the same way that you'll benefit from the next world. What are the pleasures of the next world? Well, nobody's been there and back, but what we do know is it's Lenos Miziv Ashkina, that somehow we get close to the, you know, the supernal light and radiance of the Shekhinah itself. Says Rav Eliyahu Lapyan, that's what this world is all about as well. Even in this world, if we dedicate ourselves to enjoy the pleasures of Ziv HaShekhinah, if we look and turn over every single possible leaf, every single possible opportunity to do mitzvos and ma'asim tovim in this world in the traklin, then what we're doing is we're really creating a traklin that is that resembles and prepares for the, I'm sorry, we're creating a prose though, I meant to say, that prepares us for the traklin. L'archivu l'amik tainug amiti. We can have the true, endless pleasure in life in this world itself. And it's b'li keitz v'tachlis. He says it's endless, it's infinite. And that's the way we prepare ourselves for the ultimate tainug and the pleasures of the world to come. And dafka in this world, which is the corridor, we can prepare ourselves, if we choose, to build our corridor the same way that the traklin, the ultimate Olam HaBa, is going to be built, with the most beautiful pleasures, the infinite pleasures of enjoying Torah mitzvos. And this takes us back to our original point that when you serve God out of a sense of ava, when you realize that all the opportunities that God sends your way are really gold, they're golden opportunities. It's a love relationship. God is showering upon you love. The yira relationship of fear is something totally different. Fundamentally different. That means that, you know, I'm worried about getting a patch. You know, I'm going to get hit over the head if I don't live up to the standards. But if my motivation is ava, to love God, and I appreciate that all the opportunities that He sends my way are golden, then my pleasures of this world are really me'ein olam haba. They are very similar to the ultimate traklin of olam haba. And finally, we'll just end with one last paragraph from the Pele Yoetz, which you'll find on page 84, which will say Pei Dalet on the top right. V'yavino arishon Yaakov b'chir ha'avos. He speaks about Father Jacob, who's the perhaps the most significant of all the avos. What did he ask for? He turns to Hashem. Lo shol meis Hashem el lechem lechol ubegin lilbosh. Let's look at what he's asking for. Is he desiring luxury in life? He's asking for bread to eat to keep him going, for clothes to keep him warm in the winter, the basic necessities of life. Because Yaakov Avinu appreciates and he understands that this world is just a prozdor. This world is just a an over derech. And that's what the Tana means in Ovos when he says, Kachi darka shel Torah, pasvam el tochal mayim v'mishor tishteh. We don't have to spend all of our life eating in the fanciest restaurants and loving the fanciest gourmet foods. We can sleep on a normal bed. We don't have to buy, you know, they have these beds with mattresses that are, you know, a couple of feet tall with canopies and all that. We don't have to go for all that. And hein emes shebedoros halolu. It's true that in our generation, he says, we're so used to luxuries. Again, this is the Pelioites. This is not Rav Moshe Feinstein in America. Pelioites 2 centuries ago. And he says, Eino yochel ochiach, he can't give musa to his friend, velomalo. And he say, well, why don't you eat just a piece of bread and just drink water and just sleep on the ground? But nevertheless, the message is a very profound message. And we have to get used to what we have to need and what our basic needs are. And if somebody Nebuch is poor, we have to certainly supply him with his needs. And that's the message, the moral message for life and its value. So Yehi Ratzon, we should end with a prayer that we should be zocheh to follow in the footsteps of the Pelioites and take the, you know, the recommendations of all these great scholars that we learned tonight, whether it's Rabbi Aryeh Levin, who says, I'm not willing to call it my bias, whether it's Rav Shlomo Zalman, who says that Avraham Avinu's message is that of an oel, whether it be Rav Moshe Feinstein, whose message is that don't only look for good times, but good times in the positive sense because of the mitzvahs. And finally, the idea that we can achieve in this world, may ein olam haba, if we pursue and enjoy the pleasures that are eternal, that are infinite, that are meaningful on a spiritual level. Kedi Ratzon. Amen. Thank you so much.